Welcome to Influential Visions. Here, we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. My name is Nathaniel Schooler, and I am your host today. Well, today I am joined by Tim Chase, and he's the founder of True Challenge. And you're a recovered headhunter, aren't you, Tim?
Recovering headhunter, yeah. I'm not sure.
Are you still recovering?
Yeah, exactly.
So today we're gonna talk about some tips for job hunters, because I know it's a difficult time for a lot of people right now. You know, you and I, we both work for ourselves, so we're very, very lucky to have found our purpose, right? Or kind of meaning, more meaning in life. But how did you kind of end up where you are?
What, geographically or
no? Mentally? Not mentally, no. I'm thinking with your current the business that you actually started, like, because it's actually a very exciting business, and I know you gave me a brief kind of intro into that the other day. So please, can you tell me more about it?
Yeah. So for my first start as a headhunter, or about the business itself?
No, about your current business and how you ended up there.
Yeah. So I was going through a bit of my life where I've been a headhunter and had headhunting businesses for about 15 years. I've been in the industry for about 15 years. And I'd sort of become a single dad to a two and a half year old boy. And I was kind of getting a bit bored of the recruitment life. Every life is stressful, but it was kind of cutthroat. You were kind of working by yourself, even though I had a business with about eight, 15 people at its maximum. And I was just kind of going, well, actually, when my son's at the age where he's interested in what I do, what do I tell him? You know, he hears me on the phone, but it doesn't make any sense. And kind of, I'm always conscious that he observes me, or was observing me all the time, was taking a lot of example from watching me. I was like, well, I need to do something a bit more substance to it. You know, it's great. The recruitment industry is massive. But I just wanted to, I was kind of done with it really. So I was looking for what I could be doing next. And I love my sport and I've loved football. And I was like, well, I'd love to get involved in something like that. But really, it was like, I'm not an athlete, professional. I'm not an ex-athlete in any way, shape or form, in any way, in any sport. But I kind of started learning, understanding a bit more about socials and media and things like this. And actually kind of YouTubers aren't necessarily great athletes, but they have still kind of have a successful career. So I was then watching him. He'd spend, if I let him, spend hours on YouTube watching, I won't use a rude word, but a little kid called Ryan's Toy Review unwrapping presents. And this kid was, I think, 8 years old at the time. Would send him toys. He would unwrap them, play with them for 5 minutes, and that was his video. And he used to get, there's one video I saw of him got over a billion views.
Wow.
And I was like, well, there must be something out there that he can watch those influencers, in quotes, but instead of them just going, here, watch my stuff, actually kind of empower them and encourage them to actually do something. So the kind of idea started with him, would be like, here's how you build the best fort in the world. Go and grab your mum and dad's duvet, 10 pillows, do this, and then upload a video of you showing me what you've done. And then he can comment on it, and you feel like it's bridging the gap of that engagement rather than just watching, you're actually taking part. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I used to be a tech headhunter, and one of my clients was actually a really good friend, Darren Goldsby, who was at Hearst Magazine at the time. And I really trusted him, and he was in that world. So I went to him, we had a meeting, I went to him with the idea, and he went, this is effing brilliant. Hmm. And kind of said loads of stuff that I didn't know anything about, but then I researched it. And kind of, we sort of sat down in the meeting and said, look, this is a really good idea, but actually getting kids to do stuff is probably not appropriate. Plus how much, it's going to be quite a hard slog. But sports was the area we decided to concentrate on, because people are generally more active and more happy about posting pictures or videos of themselves, at least on their social media. Here's me doing my 100 press-ups of the day, or doing CrossFit or yoga or anything like this. And obviously most of the YouTubers are kind of football-related as well, what they post. We decided to launch True Challenge, I think it was November 2017, with a young YouTuber called Keel Skills. And our first video got 1 million views around the world. So we went, oh, might have stumbled on something here. Then kind of took the app down, took the website down because it was just the bare minimum. Raised some funds to do it properly. And then in November 2018, we launched with a professional football club called Roma, AS Roma, the Italian Giants. Mm-hmm. And in, I think in 2 weeks, we got 1.7 million views around the world. Their Instagram post launching the challenge was the most engaged post they've ever had on Instagram.
And then
we've grown on from there. So now, obviously, the coronavirus has kind of meant people at home are looking for things to do. So we've just kind of gone on from strength to strength, really. So we launched a hackathon with IBM, United Nations and SAP last week, and that closed on Wednesday. And we were hoping for 50 responses, and we've had nearly 250 responses.
Oh, wonderful. So, yes, that's good.
Thanks for having us on your podcast promoting it last week with Mel.
No worries.
And then on the back of that, and this all happened because I posted on social media 3 weeks ago saying, look, the True Plans platform's here. I'm going to give it out to any education sort of organisation who wants it. Mm-hmm. Feel free to kind of get in touch. United Nations got in touch. Mel from IBM got in touch with this hackathon. We've got another one coming out targeting the 1.5 billion kids that are at school. Because a lot of these kids are online. We need to educate them about being online in a much safer environment.
So interesting. That's very interesting. I've got something to talk to you about on that. Okay.
So, yeah, so it's kind of like, so they've got, it's working with the DQ Institute, which is becoming a digital citizen. Mm-hmm. So everyone's online, but no one really knows what it means. So it's things like teaching kids that you need to be careful about what you like and what you post because it can affect your future career. Also, they're never really lost. They're always going to be there. So you need to be careful of that. Having safe passwords, not giving your information away. So that we've got a series of 8 challenges that kind of summarize a little bit of a lesson like that. But actually, the action and the challenge behind it is much more powerful than it actually is. So the 2 challenges, for example, are one's how important it is to have a safe password. So it's a challenge that you do with your parents. So it's for kids between 6 and 13, I think. Mm-hmm. So the first challenge is write down a password, and it's got to be a word and a number. And then you and your parent, kind of, they write down one each, and then you have to guess what the password is. So you have to go, right, is the password you're related to a pet? Yes, usher. Is it your date of birth? Yes, usher. Oh, so it's a pretty good example that you actually need a much better password. And then the other one is being careful what information you share online and what's the why is that important. Mm-hmm. So the first challenge we do is that, and it's actually coming up with a secret handshake, you know, that you do, that you see all these footballers do after they score a goal, coming up with a cool handshake with you and your parent that you then try and do. And it's got at least 6 different sort of phases to it. So mm-hmm. fist bump, a high five and all that type of stuff.
Then that's super interesting.
Right. So it's really interesting kind of dynamic about quite a dull subject, an uninteresting subject for kids being safe online. You're not going to engage with anyone that way. But actually, with a slight sort of twist on it, you can actually make it much more engaging and kids will pick up on it. Hmm. So actually, me and my son are going to be the face of that. And we've got a load of WWE stars that are going to be taking part in it as well, which could be a little bit random.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Hopefully my son won't suplex me or attempt to suplex me. And then we've actually got a call this afternoon with FIFA and UEFA, and another one with the FA and the Premier League next week that again want to use the platform for kind of doing a bit of good and using this time because everyone's bored, you know. Parents,
yeah,
I'm quite a positive attitude about everything, and everything is an opportunity. So even this time when you're locked down and it's really hard to focus kids, I've got a little boy who's 7 and another little boy who's 10 months, both have different challenges. But I'm using this time to kind of properly engage with him. So actually kind of reconnecting with him and actually doing a challenge. You kind of feel like you're achieving something together. So in the morning we do the Joe Wicks workout, and then we go in the garden and do our own workout. And some one morning he puts up a drill together with cones and goals and footballs and stuff. And then the next morning I do it. And he's now really understanding the value of achieving something. Then it's quite important life lesson, I think.
So that in relation to finding meaning in life, right? Like your boys have given you more meaning in life because you felt that what you were doing wasn't really aligned with how you wanted him to grow up. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, exactly. Well, one thing, it's, I didn't want to be an uncle dad. I think that's probably part of it. And now I get, so he's on my phone and we get a call. So Gilberto Silva is a footballing legend and he's now pretty much one of my best mates. He's come to my son's school with me to pick him up from school. And Ben, my son, just thinks of him as one of daddy's mates and then sees a clip of him on YouTube and goes, did Gilberto win the World Cup? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, he's mega famous. Yeah, I mentioned him. Yeah. I mentioned him to Mike Tobin earlier. We were having a chat about future guests for this new show I'm doing soon. But so I know a lot of people are really struggling, right? So have you got any sort of really good tips for how people can work with recruiters right now?
Yeah, so it's quite different because obviously I've been a recruiter. I was a recruiter for 15 years, or headhunter recruiter, but I've also recruited staff. And when you're recruiting for staff, you see them as a necessary evil. They're expensive. Some of them are really poor and don't send you anything that's quite right. And you kind of end up going, why am I wasting my time sending you this, talking to you, and you sending me irrelevant CVs? You clearly haven't listened to the brief or our conversation. So the first thing is to do is, I would say find at least three recruiters that you either worked with in the past or you've been recommended or that you trust, and really build a relationship with them. And it's the same as if you were the recruiter or you were working for someone. You need to build a relationship with someone. You know, you can't just pick up the phone and go, can you get me a job? That's it, because you'll be put, it's a bit like estate agents where you get a list, you're trying to sell a house, you've got a list of the people that you know are looking. It's kind of something like that. So build a relationship. The first thing that I'll do is find three is a good number, recruiters that you build a relationship with them, and kind of don't immediately go, find me a job. Go, look, just wanted to make you aware that this is my skill set. This is what I'm looking for. This is my area. This is what I'm finding. If you find anything, please let me know. And I'll do it personally on the phone rather than just a WhatsApp, a LinkedIn message or an email. Build a personal relationship from them. It'd be no different if you were in any other industry. Build a relationship with them. Call them kind of once a week, but I always say have a purpose to any call, even if it's a sales call. Don't just call up with nothing to talk about. If it's even, it could be sort of saying, finding out that they're, I was going to say a football fan, but there's no football going on. But if they're an Arsenal fan, saying, oh, I saw Gilberto Silva tweeted last night about such and such. Do you remember that game? Find a bit of common ground and build a rapport and relationship with them. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to start getting through into much better conversations with them. By all means, still having the chat, adverts going through and responding to adverts and the automation stuff through. But you need to build up a recruiter who's an expert in your area and someone that you actually trust. Because it's the same as any industry. There's some really good recruiters out there, and there really are, but there are also some bastard recruiters out there as well.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to be really associated with them because they might get the job done, but it just won't be a great experience. So yeah, build a rapport with them. And then if you see an advert, keep an eye on there, because these recruiters will post on LinkedIn when they want to recruit someone. So when you see them post, go give them a call and say, look, I've seen you just posted this advert. I think I could do a job. What do you think? And keep on their back, because they may have, you know, when I was not doing headhunting, it was more of a recruiter. If we posted a certain advert, so say it was an IT project manager or a developer, we'd maybe have 1,000 responses in a day, and it's just impossible to go through. So you kind of have to go like a scan through, no, all this software now that you do it, amount of keywords in it. And if your CV isn't completely right to that, then you just won't get the call. I'd also recommend having a standard CV that you send out for the first point of call, but then don't feel too proud to kind of change your CV accordingly. So there might be that there's a role with the Premier League, project manager for the Premier League, and you're a good project manager, but you haven't put down that you're a coach and you used to play football and that you've got your qualification badges. So from your hobby side of things, your personal life, you're actually very qualified in football, but you've never worked for a football company.
Right.
That might just be enough to excite people to go, actually, he's worth giving him a call. Because then you're giving an angle to the recruiter. You say, look, he's not worked for any other football club. He's not worked for any sporting organisation. However, he's been a football coach for 10 years. He's qualified to UEFA badge one or whatever. I'm giving a random example here.
Yeah.
But it's important to kind of be able to sort of move the importance around of the CV or the focus of the CV around, depending on the job title, depending on the job specification.
Yeah, I've got you. I wrote this book, right? Cheers to you. And it's not on Amazon or anything. I'm literally giving it away right now because people need it. And it actually has a brand blueprint in there. So you can go and you can create your perfect wording, which you can then take and use for each one of these things. So you could take it and use it for your LinkedIn. You can take it and you can adapt it for your CV. And so it basically starts as a very, very simple one-page document. So it gives you the words that you need. But if you're not very good with words, then I recommend that you basically go and find someone who is, and maybe find someone who's really good within your niche, right? Who understands the software, perhaps if you're in the technology industry. And then you can talk to them, right? And they'll help you to actually get the right words and sort those out. Because you can also use a thesaurus, but it's good to have someone to check your work, really. I think that's, what's that?
Theosaurus a dinosaur?
Theosaurus on Google, right?
Nice.
But that's really good advice. That's really good advice. So basically, I mean, when I was out of work about 10 years ago before I became self-employed, I kind of found it very hard to contact recruiters, and I never forget going to this interview once, and it was horrific. I went to this interview, and it was for this. So it was basically, it was this this farm. Yeah, the owner of the farm was an ex racing driver. Yeah, you probably know who I'm talking about, right? Yep. Mega wealthy. Yeah, but the thing is, he'd launched this beer that was basically, it had a picture of a child on, yeah, and a child had actually drawn this label, okay. And I never forget the fact that I just sat there and I said, well, you know, I'm not being funny, but you really need to change that. That's probably actually against regulations, yeah, you know, because actually it appeals to a child, yeah. And he really didn't like that at all, and I never forget the fact that the woman never got back to me. She yep. never actually said, oh, well, he didn't think you were right, and we didn't think you were right because of this. Yeah. And it's just like, she phoned me, harassed me, right, and said, oh, well, you could get a brand new Mercedes here, and you can get this and that and everything else. Yeah. And then I actually was unemployed at the time. So I had to pay for petrol to get there. Yeah. Took half a day out of my time. I had to get my suit dry cleaned. Yeah. Right. So it cost me like 60 quid or whatever. Yeah. Right. To get there plus half a day. Yeah. And they didn't even have the respect. Yeah. To get back to me. And I was like livid about this.
Yeah. It's one of the things I used to say when I was changing the new starters for my company. I was saying, look, you've got to promise to call back. And it's really easy to build a good reputation by doing what you say and just being a decent human being. You know, it's never nice calling somebody up and saying, look, unfortunately you weren't good enough because of X, Y, Z, but it's got to be done. You know, you wouldn't expect not to, you know, if you put the shoe on the other foot, and if you'd, like I said, spent 60 quid travel for half an hour or whatever, it's a decent thing to do to call them back. So I always made sure that they're, yeah, that was kind of one of the personal core values that I had to put in place. Look, it's really easy. It's really easy to build a good reputation. So you're going to call them back and call them at that time. That's it.
That's exactly.
The surefire way of building a really bad reputation is saying you're going to do something and not doing it.
Well, I do you know what I actually wrote? I actually responded to a comment in Off License News. I actually wrote to Off License News. It's a shame I've lost it. Yeah, because I wrote this comment basically just saying that I thought it was absolutely ridiculous. I went for an interview with them, and because I replied to this comment about their actual packaging for this product, yeah, and I never got a response, yeah, from them. But I actually got my own back, and it made me feel much better, and it just made me laugh. Yeah, it was just hilarious, like getting this whole thing in Off License News, basically saying.
For people that are listening to the podcast, you just stuck a specific finger up at the screen.
Yeah, I did. But the thing is, it's manners, right? Like, and I don't care how much money you've got. Yeah, they have this old saying, don't they? From, I think it's from Winchester, actually, Winchester College or Eton, one or the other. And they say, manners maketh the man. Yeah.
Yep.
And that is so important. Like, it doesn't matter who they are. You need to just be polite, really, and put yourself in someone else's shoes. That's how I'm looking at it.
Yeah,
really.
And it's a surefire way to upset people, because you don't know that person could be perfect for the job you have the next day. You know, I mean, if you have put a business reason behind it, you know, that's it. But as you say, common decency.
Yeah,
you should just call them back. And as I say, it's a really easy way to win a good reputation. Go, they're very appreciative. You go, they're really appreciative. You go, thanks a lot for giving me a call. I know it was a bit awkward, but I really appreciate it, honestly, because you're not actually, you know, it's not your opinion.
No.
You're not saying that, unfortunately, the client has said that X, Y, Z, but it's when the client come back, it does happen, the client comes back to you and says, we just didn't like him, there's a bit of an arsehole. You're like,
yeah.
How do I go back to that?
Well.
You just have to say there's a bit of clash of
past. Well.
Then you fit in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think you know, though. I mean, I haven't been to that many interviews, to be fair. I can't stand interviews. They drive me freaking crazy. But, like, there's so much more information now online about things that it's a lot easier, really, to do your research on the people. You know, I've been studying and talking to loads of people about recruitment, recently in the past couple of years, you know, and it's like, I just think it's actually just like selling a product.
I've got a funny story about that sort of thing and find out stuff online. So one of the other companies I had, someone came in for an interview and one of the guys went, what was his name? As I sort of went off to interview him and I was like, it's such and such. I won't say his name because it would be unfair. And I really recognize that name. And this is a guy who was was very bright and didn't forget a thing. There was no way you could get away with anything. Like you could retweet something 10 years ago and he'd remember it and bring it up. Anyway, so I came out of the interview, guys, I found out who it was. You know, like, what was that? Like, what is he? And he goes, he was the guy who had sex on the grounds of Windsor Castle during Ascot Week. I was like, what? He goes, yeah, here's the Sun article about it. And it's front page news. And it was about having sex with his, I suppose, the girlfriend on the lawns of Winchester Castle during Ascot Week. So the Queen's and the Queen was in residence. So he was found out with that. And I'm like, how did you remember that? He goes, I don't know. I was like, well, I can't, because that's, you know, we brought him for a second interview and spoke about it. He goes, yeah, that's been the main boundary for me going out, not getting another job. It's like, it could be a bad thing for us, mate. You know, we were specialising in banking at the time. If they find out that we recruited you, how's that going to represent the company?
Yeah.
So a quick struggle cuddle on Windsor Castle lawns has directly impacted him. I won't use it on that course that I'm doing with the DQ Institute to educate kids about being online. It might be a little bit inappropriate story to tell a 12-year-old kid, don't have sex in front of the Queen.
That's
before social media.
It's probably not good. Yeah, but the thing is that, I mean, all of this comes to my next question, really. You know, and we've got a little bit of time to talk about this, right? You know, and it's basically how to land that next interview.
Yeah. So, as I kind of sort of said before, it's about building a rapport with the recruiter. And if you're a specialist in a certain type of development or a project management or something like that, you've got a specific niche that you work in. Whether you're a project manager, you're going to be you don't really get project managers, you just manage any type of project. You normally have sort of digital project managers or some sort of technology and you specialize in that. So find a recruiter, because quite often now you get recruiters that specialize in that as well. So for example, I don't know, commodities or something like that. So if you're a commodities project manager, find a recruitment agent within a small one-man band, or it could be within someone within a larger organization who specializes in your industry. So I think that is the kind of the first and foremost thing to do. But then not hound them, because you don't want to be a pain in the ass, but you just want to keep them aware that actually he's a decent guy. Then they'll go and sort of sell you onto their clients before and say, look, this guy's Tim. I've spoken with him for like the last 6 months. We've got a real good rapport with him now. He comes across really well. I know he's not perfect, but I really think you should see him. Because whether you like recruitment agents or not, they are going to be the gatekeepers for a large portion of getting through the process. They're almost like a filter.
Yeah.
So rather than kind of working against them, join the gang kind of thing and embrace what they've got to do. So then they can actually go, because a good recruiter, if you've got a good rapport, and if a good recruiter will have a good relationship with their client. So quite often my clients wouldn't even bother reading the CV until they got to interview, and they'll just trust me. They go, like, send me 3 CVs, arrange the interviews, and I'll see that these are the times I can do. And they'll just literally trust me to do everything. And that's the sort of recruiter you want to, not blow my own trumpet, so I'm not a recruiter anymore, but that's the sort of recruiter you want to try and find. It's quite an old school way of working now, because obviously now you have portals and things.
Yeah.
But trying to find someone who works in that kind of way is really powerful. And it's normally the smaller organizations that have it. I think it is all about relationships. Same as every business, you know, people buy from who they know.
So
it might take a little bit of research, and it might take 10, 15 phone calls to find someone. You might call them up, and if they don't give you the time of day, fine. You know, you don't want to work with them.
That sounds very interesting. But I mean, like, would you also recommend people actually have a look and Google themselves? And check out what they look like online first, because I mean, I know a lot of people, right? And you know, certainly for the younger audience who may be listening to this, I think if you've got very bad impression that you've landed upon a recruiter or a recruitment agent or a hiring manager, right? Like, they're not even going to look at you because they're going to Google you, like, or they're going to look on LinkedIn and they're going to look at you there, and then if perhaps that your name is not very recognizable, is very unique, then, you know, potentially they're going to find you on Facebook and Twitter, and then they're going to go and look there, and then you're not even going to get a look in if you don't mop this up, right?
Absolutely. More and more people are having part of their processes. Once they find a candidate, they'll then go and search them and see how they are, what their online profile is like. So it's massively important. And I think when I did it, when I set up True Challenge, I started getting more and more interviews and podcasts and things. And then when I started doing appearances and speaking at conferences and things, I was like, I need to make sure that I've not bitched about this football club, like, before I even was working in the industry. Because if I said, God, Chelsea are useless, the way they treat their managers is disgraceful, and I was going to have to do a conference at Stamford Bridge, that wouldn't go down too well. And if we suddenly started getting kind of quite popular, people will then start Googling me. It might be that I've got a really important meeting with Real Madrid and I've made a negative comment about them, and that could lose me potentially a big client. So it's really important. I wouldn't say you get into a vicious circle of Googling yourself, but I'd definitely recommend going through your profile and looking at your activity. Because I deleted some couple of things. I was like, what? Like, one was complaining that some company came to pick up my washing machine or fix my washing machine. The mechanic was rude. I was like, what?
Why did you do that?
What's that warranted for? I think it was just venting. My old marriage. So probably.
It all happens. It all happens.
I'd certainly recommend going through and filtering out the things that you've shared, the things that you've liked, the things that you've commented on. And Twitter is the main killer for everyone because it's kind of an emotional platform. If you think about something, you just type it out and you tweet it out.
I did that this morning, actually. I blocked the guy in the end. He just got really abusive. I was just like, because it was just like this conversation about data and COVID-19 and it's like, look, you know, we all know it's all about data. We all know it's all about collection of data. And it's like, you're carrying on a conversation which I had 2 weeks ago. Like, it's just ridiculous waste of time. But the thing is that if you want, you can download an app. There's an app called Jumbo, which is a privacy app, and you can plug in your emails into that to see if you've had a data breach, and your details are found on the dark web. You can plug in Facebook, Twitter, and a few other platforms, and then basically it will go out and actually remove tracking stuff, and it will also delete old comments and make them private as well on Facebook. So that's super useful. I'm interviewing the CEO, I think, on Tuesday.
That'd be interesting.
Which it should be interesting, because
he come up with that idea. He must have a really dark past to come up with that idea.
Who, him? Well, he's I think he founded some kind of business and sold it before. I'm not quite sure. I forget what it was. I speak to so many people, right? But it's really about finding some common ground, right? And actually making sure that you're not overinflating yourself, because a lot of people they will say, oh, I do this, or I can do that, or I can, you know. And it's like, well, actually, can you really do that, or are you adding buzzwords to your profile, right?
Yeah, and I think if you're working with a recruiter that's an expert in that field, they will get personal recommendations on you. So they'll go, oh, I know someone, let's say you worked at BP in 2004, and they knew someone who worked with you. They'll call them and go, what did you think of Tim? You know? And they go, do you know what? He was a sack of shit, but that was 15 years ago. He might be better now. He was a nice guy, but technically he wasn't very strong. Then you find, so they will do those sort of checks unofficially. They could do them, sorry. And if you're working in that sort of niche, your name will go around really quickly. So I think, and that's all part of your reputation. I think there's an old wives' tale, I'm not sure if it's true, that I used to use. And it was this guy was going for an interview and he snuck into someone's parking space at a company car park, around the corner, like Tesco's car park. And the woman got out of the car and said, look, you just nick my parking space. He goes, I don't effing care. Do what you want. I'm taking the parking spot. And he went off and got his lunch. Went for the interview and came up, and the woman whose parking space was Nick was the interviewer.
Oh,
so I'm not sure if that's true. Part of me would like to think that it was, but yeah. So that's kind of a good representation of how you should behave online. You know, you never know. Yeah. You could have an argument with someone. But yeah, argue online. I just don't have enough time in my day. And I'm like, I kind of sometimes look at it and go, well, in fact, so when I post, I do a podcast with the football legend Gilberto Silva. And we posted out a clip from the first show. And he shared it. And then his, because obviously here he is, it was shared loads of times. And I was having a look through and a woman had shared the clip. And someone had commented on her video, I think it was her husband, who's the dickhead with Gilberto Silva? He looks bald shitless. So we've actually been releasing some t-shirts now saying I'm the dickhead with Gilberto Silva. And I've done my first blog post was who's the dickhead with Gilberto Silva? Well, that's me. And it kind of not didn't go viral, but it did perform really well. And I responded to that saying that was brutal, mate, or brutal with a big happy smiley face. It doesn't upset me. But I was like, well, actually, and he's since deleted the comment. I was like, mate, leave it on there, you know, it doesn't upset me. But I kind of, comments online are normally quite vicious, and the only way, and the platforms love it, because if you put up negative posts, then those people comment on it. Yeah. That's what platforms thrive on. And I just don't have enough, I'm not that bothered enough to kind of get in a row with it. So I'm like, if I put in my comment about this, I'll go, oh, do you know what, I'm just going to end up with 50 responses. I can't be bothered to deal with them. So
I'm it's just not... I just use the block. The block button is like my best friend, really. Like anyone that replies to me in the wrong way, I just block them now. I don't have time to mess about, really. Yeah. I don't want to engage in a negative conversation. And if you're going to say something stupid and include me in some massive like group of comments with other people, and you don't like what I've got to say, and you come back to me with the wrong comment, I'm going to block you. I'm not going to bother engaging and asking you and trying to prove how nice I am. Like, I know I'm a nice person. If you don't like me, then that's fine. Goodbye.
You know, and it's kind of this whole thing of why do people complain online? If you don't like what I'm posting,
just go somewhere else.
I'm not desperate for you to look at it.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to say, so I've got a new tactic for this. So I'm sort of more, my profile's going up working with Gilberto, I'm getting more and more sort of DMs for requests for things, like I have a free shirt and things like this.
Yeah.
So I had one DM, which was an FX trader saying, have you thought about making money on the side from the FX trading? I was like, did you know? And I responded saying, not even a little bit, mate. And he responded, it was also an automated thing to set through. He goes, have you considered such and such? I'm like, did you know that I can run really fast? And I got it back. So, and I actually had it yesterday. So I posted something yesterday. And a guy from India, CEO from India saying, we are the makers of, and it was a post about, it was my blog post. I can't remember what the blog was now. It was actually, so the first episode of the Gilberto podcast, we're in his house and his wife, who's a lovely human being, lovely woman and a lovely human being. We were filming, and just as we filmed, she started to try and make lunch. Well, you can't. And so you can hear her making stuff in the background as the cameras are on, the lights are on. And then she smashed a plate, and I could see her over the top of the camera going, oh no, I'm so sorry. And I fall about laughing, uncontrollably fall about laughing, because you notice that when you're not supposed to laugh, it makes it worse. And me and Gilberto fall about laughing, and I have to say, look, the reason we're laughing is you probably heard, but Gilberto's wife is kindly making us lunch, but she just smashed the plate. Anyway, so I posted a blog about that. And this guy from India, the CEO of this marketing company, saying, we make sports manufacturing goods for this, 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 and this, and basically hijacked my post. And rather than going, this is the right appropriate thing, or deleting or anything, I was like, did you know we make these things, these things, these things? I'm like, did you know I failed my cycling proficiency test the first time? I got a few likes there. People who know me know exactly what I was trying to do.
That's funny.
He commented, he goes, I'm really, I feel really bad for you. I'm so sorry. That's not good news. I'm like, it was 30 years ago, mate. I'm not upset by it. But yeah, so I kind of taken on to people and go, oh yeah, no, I won't.
But that's a really good point though, that you make. Yeah. And it all fits in really well into how to land that interview. Yeah. And it's like, if you find yourself out of work right now, just write a blog about something that you've done in the past and showcase it on your LinkedIn profile and go to the people who give you references on LinkedIn and actually say to them, look, you know, are you willing to speak to a recruiter? If they message you and ask you about me, what are you going to say? Yeah. And that's really, really super important, you know. I mean, I've gone for like volume of LinkedIn recommendations. Some people go for like one or two really high quality ones from, you know, top CEOs or whatever, right? But I've just gone for, you know, a number of different ones over the years, right? I haven't put them all on there, but I think don't be afraid to go and ask for recommendations. I think you should, and even write them for people. Say, look, I've written this. Can you please, you know, give me this recommendation? I'll quite happily, you can change it if you want, no problem. But I thought I'd save you the time, yeah? Because there's nothing wrong with doing that. You know, potentially appear on some podcasts, write some articles, maybe make a video if you can. Yeah. Some people don't like doing video, but I think everyone's in the same boat right now. Like, that's why it's such an exciting time, isn't it?
Because you've got to stand out. You've got to do something to stand out. And I think I've kind of said it before, building a relationship with people. And I think it's capitalizing on opportunities as well. So if I had a chance, basically, the reason I knew Gilberto was just before we launched, I went to a show called SoccerX. I was helping a friend out present his RoboKeeper, which is a goalkeeper that sits in a goal and it's basically impossible to score against him. Mm-hmm. I was introduced to Gilberto and I just didn't ask him any questions about football. We were just two blokes and he was going through in his personal life something similar. He was basically supposed to be the main person at this networking event. Me and him sat at the bar and chatted for 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And that built upon that. And so it's these chance things, and then with FIFA it's trying these things out, and it's all this stuff with FIFA has come from a blog. So they're talking at this massive event in November, it's come from a blog post, you know, and I was having an argument about putting this blog post out, and so many things happen from doing this sort of thing. And I also think that a lot of people, I don't know if it's lazy, I don't think that's the right word, but I think email and sort of direct messaging people is such a poor way of communicating.
Agreed.
I'm sure we've all been in, had rows where someone's taken something in the wrong way. So yeah. I get probably 500 emails a day, but I maybe send 10 emails a day. Mm-hmm. And everything is done on the phone with me. It's just a better way of building relationships with everybody. And I quite often get from my staff saying, can you just send me a WhatsApp or a Slack message? I'm like, no, because we'll be in and they get, we're talking for about an hour online like that, or we have a 5 minute phone call.
Yeah. A lot of the time you can do that, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's exactly the same. Rather than sending an email to the recruiter who you've seen an advert for, you've heard their recruiting, just have a phone call, then send an email saying, great to talk to you earlier, just wanted to recap, here's my CV again, I've made a few changes, and just to reiterate what I said on the phone call. It's what I do as a salesperson. When I'm doing my sales role, speaking to new clubs, getting some new signups for the platform, I do exactly the same. I don't send an email because people just go, no, not interested.
Exactly. It goes back to basics, right? It's like sales basics 101. Yeah. Like, you know, I've got loads of great resources for people who are selling. Because look, we're all selling something, right? I'm selling myself to you. You're selling yourself to me. We're selling ourselves to people who are listening to us or anyone that we talk to, right? I mean,
I heard the greatest phrase I heard was a salesperson's job doesn't start till the other person says no. Because at the moment, otherwise, that time you're just talking. And you can't start selling yourself until you've had a conversation and found out what they don't know, until you found out what their objections are.
Yeah,
so until they go, Tim, I don't think you're quite right for this role. Until you find out why they don't think that, you're not selling, you're just talking. So you're talking without a purpose almost. But if you can find out, well, look, Tim, I've looked at your CV and unfortunately you don't have X experience. You go, well, actually I do because I did this. And they go, oh shit, well, now you're perfect for it. So that's something you would have missed out while having an email conversation with someone.
Yeah,
because people via emails, as I say, it's a poor way of communicating, and you just generally just draft it down and chuck it out there anyway. But having actually a phone call, then you can build up, find out what their objections are.
Yeah, and also make sure that you take your time to communicate. Like, you don't need to rush your communications. Like, that's the biggest problem that I've made that mistake in the past. Yeah, when I've been trying to get meetings or, you know, and it's like, ask them what they want, right? If you ask them what they want, yeah, you're more likely to be able to explain that you can give it to them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And have more of a consultative kind of approach. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, exactly. I get it when all the times now. So I get, not to drop names, but I get meeting requests from some really high profile people and players and things. And I used to go, they send me an email saying, what time is good for you? And I used to go, I can do this, 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 and this. And I go, rather than being, because they're sports people, not business people, rather than going, actually, I can't do that, but I could do here. They just go, I can't do any of those times. Then you go, okay, how about here?
no, I can't do those times. He ended up spending 2 weeks setting up a meeting for half an hour. So I know to go, let me know when's best for you. And they go, how about Tuesday? Great. Tuesday at 10 a.m.? No. How about 12? Yes. Job done. rather than going backwards and forwards. So I think the biggest lesson I've learned as I've got older and allegedly wiser is a bit of patience. You know, not being so quick to respond to stuff.
Yeah. And
patience and not pushing it so hard.
Yeah. But also, like, you know, this job that you get next, it may be the job that you see out the rest of your career with. It might not be. It might just be a stepping stone, yeah? Because the way things have changed in recent years, things have changed, yeah? So, yeah. But also, if you decide, okay, well, I actually know someone in that business, I'm gonna bypass this recruiter altogether and I'm gonna go direct. And it's always good to go direct, right? And then absolutely. And then if they've got a contract with the recruiter, they're gonna go back and use them anyway to look into you, right?
Yeah, so that happens. So recruitment is massively expensive, especially when I was a headhunter. We would charge 30% of the first year's annual salary and any guaranteed bonuses, so like car allowances and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's really expensive. And companies, if you're a company with 10,000 people, your natural attrition is about 10%. So you're going to be recruiting 1,000 people every year, which is a shit ton of money. If every placement is 10 grand, that's a load of money. So companies now actually, rather than paying, I think when I was a normal recruiter, the average margin was about 18%, 18 to 22% of the starting salary, which is still not an insignificant number. So companies were putting in place personal referral schemes. So if you referred someone and they got the job, you'll get 5% as a little thank you of their starting salary. So companies get more and more wise out of that, because you'll get better candidates because they've been recommended and they don't want to look like an arsehole in front of their boss. So more and more companies are doing that. So absolutely. Then LinkedIn is the perfect tool for that. So you could just kind of, let's say, I don't know, BT Sport were looking to recruit somebody. You can put BT Sport in the searching LinkedIn and see who you know at LinkedIn. And it might be a person, a friend of a friend that knows it. And you go, Nate, do you know such and such? I think they're recruiting for someone. No, I don't, but let me find out who that is. And lo and behold, you kind of bypass the recruiter. And sometimes the recruiters have an agreement where they get paid no matter what. But that's fine. But at the end of the day, if you're looking for a job, you don't really care if a commission, a recruiter gets their commission or not. You care if you can pay your bills.
Yeah, but if they're more likely, but also they could be more likely to go with an internal candidate as 100%. Well. And that's a really big problem, isn't it? It's a really big challenge for people. Yeah. So it's like, well, actually, how are you gonna safeguard yourself to, you know, because you don't want to waste too much time, right? If they're gonna go for so would you actually ask in the beginning and say, well, are you recruiting internally for this as well or not?
I would take it standard that they are.
You would?
Yeah, I would say they're recruiting internally for it. Well, actually, normally the process I found was they'll recruit internally and then they'll go external once they've proved it, because there's certain sort of legislations that you have to recruit internally first. And obviously it's better if you're running a company to promote someone internally and recruit below, one for a cost point of view, but also for succession planning and making your staff feel that they can actually go places within your organization. So internal would be the first point of call anyway. But yeah, I think they call them direct candidates. So direct candidates are the preferred source of people.
That's interesting.
Cheaper and they're better candidates, you know. And if you could recruit someone who could already got a good relationship with one of your members of staff, that's going to be better for your team building, isn't it?
Of course.
Obviously, they probably wouldn't go for it if it's your mate down the pub, because we don't want you to get pissed every lunch. But they're if you've got a good relationship and you trust them, because you're not going to potentially lose your job by recruiting a mate you're just going to mess around with. And I think once you're kind of our age, you know, you don't mess around too much at work anyway. Well,
no.
I've made a living out of it. I've made a company out of it. But
well, it says me with a podcast. I feel like I'm having fun all the time, you know. But it's like, that's all really useful information. I hope a lot of people get some good value from this, right? But so when it comes to actually looking for a specific job, would you try and target like 1,000 jobs and apply for 1,000 jobs, or would you just apply for like 100 and be more targeted, or 50 or 10 or something?
It's tricky. Because obviously if you're in not the greatest financial situations and got mortgages and kids and a family to provide for,
yeah,
you're going to be less determined to find the perfect job with the perfect location, the perfect salary, the perfect skills, and the perfect sort of organization you'll work for.
Mm-hmm.
So you might just go, I don't care what I do, I just need to provide for my family. And then you might be someone who's got savings or financially a bit more secure, and you can wait to hold out for that perfect role. So it's, you need to understand people's circumstances first, but I think it's just too hard to manage that amount of people. And I really think that maybe, you know, how many people, how much time you can spend on this. So people in lockdown at the moment might be able to spend, if they don't have kids and aren't homeschooling, or the kids are of an age where they can kind of look after themselves, they can maybe look after 20 roles a week. But it's, mm-hmm. Finding a job, it's been said before, and it's very true, finding a job is a full-time role. And if you've got 1,000 roles, then you're just throwing enough S till some of it sticks. So you've got to be able to follow the whole process through. I mean, you've obviously got on these websites like Indeed, I think there's one there, job site, things like this. You've got auto apply. So you can just go, right, if there's a job which is like this, or you get an alert going through and you just go, yep, send my details.
Mm-hmm.
That's all well and good. But if you've got, that might be with the same company or with the same recruiter. So if the same recruiter sees that you apply for every single job at BT Sport, they're going to know, oh, where we go. When Tim's CV will be in a minute. Yeah, here we go. Tim's CV just applied for another one. So they go, right. So Tim Chase is now. And then on their CRM, they'll go, right, Tim Chase has applied for every single role that's ever been advertised for, whether he's right or not.
Right.
So you do need to be, I'd say, yeah, definitely go. After saying that, I'd say definitely not do too many and be quite selective. But I completely get that people's situations will be like, look, I'm the project manager now. However, I'll do a customer service role to be able to provide.
Yeah. Well, whoever's listening to this, I wish you much luck with whatever jobs you're going for. And feel free to grab my ebook. There's a page. Just put your email in and grab that. That should help you. And you know, we've all been there, right? Like I've really struggled about 10 years ago. I found it very hard, and you know, a few times actually. And I remember this. I told this story the other day, actually, before I scoot off, because I know we're past time, right? But
I said we'd go over.
I know we've gone
you
over.
Didn't believe me. I told you we would.
I know.
I did a 2.5-hour podcast with you.
Yeah, well, we're not doing 2.5 hours, but no, literally, I went to the job centre. Right? I'll never forget it. I had a Triumph motorcycle at the time. I had this red 950cc triple. Yeah, really nice it was. This was a beautiful red bike, and it had T595 in the number plate, yeah? Nice. And it was a T595 Daytona, right? It was beautiful, red, really nice. And I rode from Hazelmere to Guildford, and I parked it outside the job centre, yeah? And I parked it. So the pavement was about 7 feet wide, I kid you not. And I parked it against the wall on the pavement. So it was totally out of the way. If there was a blind person or a person with a push chair, or three push chairs could have gone past, yeah. Went into the job center, right? And there were all these people, you know, drunkards and whatever, who were basically just trying to apply for benefits because they just couldn't be asked to work, which is quite sad to be in that position. And I kind of basically came out of there. And I had a parking ticket on my motorcycle, right? And at that time, I was getting, I think it was £35.64 a week, yeah, at that point in time for income support or whatever you call it, job seeker's allowance. That was it, right? And I never forget the fact that I had a parking ticket and it cost me, I think it was 60 quid, this parking ticket, yeah? And I actually saw the parking attendant scoop off up the road, yeah? And I was just fuming, yeah? And I just never forget it. And now, like, that's just like an inspirational moment for me.
Never
like
rings your applause, does it?
A bit of rage. There's nothing wrong with a bit of rage, but you need to kind of get rid of it and move beyond it, right? And just take your time. Is you know, things will change and they'll get better, right? Like that's my attitude, you know.
Absolutely. Use all those emotions for you. So I think I used to play quite a lot of golf and in competitions and things, and there used to be sort of things saying you used to try and wind the other golfer up because you can't play golf if you're angry. But obviously the best player in the world could ever argue is Tiger Woods. And he used to play better when he was angry. So if he got pissed off with something, he used to play so much better, almost like focus him. So he found a way of utilizing that anger. Now, I'm not suggesting that everyone's going to have the ability to do that, or don't be angry all the time, but I think just stick with the process, find a process that works for you, and kind of stick with it, and trust that you are good enough, trust that things will change. You know, we've all been out of work, we've all gone through tricky, tough times. There's tough times going on at the moment, but it will come good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks, Tim. You've been most generous with your time and expertise. And if anyone's thinking of like putting on a challenge, they can find True Challenge, right? And just truechallenge.com or?
Truechallenge.co.uk. So truechallenge.co.uk. So yeah, or go and find some stuff for their kids or themselves to do. We've got various challenges from sports to golf. We've got sports to golf. Golf is a sport. From football to golf. We've also got a MasterChef person in there doing some recipes and things like this. So yeah, it's a good place to kind of engage your kids. So our kind of mindset is the moment that you can give your kids an iPad and they can watch YouTube for 2 hours and achieve nothing, or they can watch one challenge with us for 30 seconds and spend the whole day trying to perfect it.
Super.
You can get involved with it as well. I've got to do a makeup tutorial with my girlfriend later this afternoon, right? You know, when you stand behind someone, put your arms, pretending what their arms are. She's going to talk her way through doing a makeup tutorial, and I'm actually going to be behind her doing it, doing her makeup for her. So she's
okay. Well, that's going to be kind of interesting.
And then I've got to shave my head as well, apparently.
Classic. Yeah. Well, thanks, Tim. That's been
great.
Thanks for listening. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections too. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thank you.